Welcome to the Divided Kingdom, the evening news program of commentary from a Christian viewpoint. This is Elizabeth Cuppett Caverly, and a little bit later we'll be joined by Lou Caverly. We're talking again about the possibility of severe climate change coming, and it isn't global warming, it is an ice age. We'll be talking about this, and if this is true, as the years ahead bring us a lot more challenges in winter, and a lot of changing weather, we'll need each other more. We'll need to be as healthy as we all can be, and that even includes the elite. I can't think that all of them are like the crazy top percent who are implementing these terrible things on us, like the vaccines, like the GMO foods, all of this. Because I think some of them realize they can never fully escape these forces if they're let loose on the world with no regulatory powers. Because things tend to go more chaotic once chaos comes. It isn't really order ab chao, ordo ab chao. It's really like chao ab chao.
A little later in the program, we'll mention the recent Arctic polar vortex that covered a large area of the United States. There was such a vortex in 2015 and another in 2019 with shattering low temperatures. We'll report later on the 2015 and 2019 and the Little Ice Age. A few weeks ago, during the newest shocking vortex, these were a few of the conditions. In Kansas City, Missouri, the Highway Patrol responded to 2,084 calls related to severe weather. They received there, again Kansas City, the heaviest snowfall in more than 30 years. In Cincinnati, I-71 was closed for all northbound traffic. Seven states declared weather emergencies and airports were in chaos, with widespread cancellations and delays. Hundreds of thousands of customers were left in the dark in Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, and some other states. A freeze watch was declared in orange-growing country of Florida, and schools were closed in multiple states, including New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, and the District of Columbia. When we come to you on this program, we should all know whether the Gateway Pundit headline came true or not. And this was it. Pastor who precisely predicted Trump getting shot in the ear, 3 months before it happened, makes another prediction. He warns of organized attacks on Trump's inauguration and iconic properties, that is Trump's iconic properties, in detail. And that article was by Jim Hoft. Pastor Brandon Biggs has sounded the alarm again. He claims to have received visions of a sprawling orchestrated attack targeting Trump, his properties on key U.S. landmarks, according to Biggs' video. The attacks are state-sponsored efforts to dismantle symbols of Trump's influence and leadership. The pastor described seeing, quote, massive dump trucks, unquote, armed with armor plating and packed with fertilizer-based explosives, echoing the devastating Oklahoma City bombing of the 1990s. He alleges that a network of operatives spread across the major cities, with each city hosting 100 attackers, trained and backed by foreign governments, possibly Iran, has infiltrated the United States through underground tunnels along the southern border. Vic says, quote, I saw massive dump trucks with separation in the back, 20-gallon drums, all filled with different chemicals. It was not black powder, but the fertilizer stuff. The dump truck was like a big diesel. They made the front of it armor plate, that is armor proof, bulletproof. You could not shoot it or make it stop. Vests on. They had explosives on these vests. And Biggs went on. Oh, I should say Jim Hoft writes that the Internet can't help but connect Pastor Biggs' vision to a recent alarming development. and this is in quotes, 60,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate, a chemical used both as a fertilizer and in explosives, is missing after disappearing during a rail trip from Wyoming to California. By the time the car reached its destination, it was completely empty, unquote. And this is Lou speaking now. How does one lose 60,000 pounds? That would seem to require some pretty in-depth investigation. But back to the article, Pastor Biggs said, quote, I warn you to pray. This is not a call to fear, unquote. And now, with less than a day left before President Trump's second swearing-in, here are some current headlines and news stories. First, Senator Kennedy says Fed's covering up alarming information about New Orleans terror attack. This is by Baxter Dimtree, January 1st, 2025, from thepeoplesvoice.tv. Senator John Kennedy has warned the federal government is not telling the truth about the New Orleans terror attack, while threatening to chase, and that's in quotes, chase federal officials like they stole Christmas if they refuse to arrest the perpetrators and tell the public the truth about the New Year's Day attack. The Louisiana senator said alarming information is being withheld from the public about Army veteran Shamsut Din Jabbar, age 42, who flew an Islamic State flag, that's ISIS, from his truck while murdering at least 15 people on Bourbon Street before dying in a firefight with police. Senator Kennedy said, quote, there's a lot of information going around. Some of it is actually true, some of it isn't. And Kennedy said that at a packed press conference on Wednesday afternoon. Again, that was dated January 1st. Islamic terror alert. With two terror attacks so far on the first day of 2025, Alex Jones predicts more events are imminent. This was from Infowars.com. Also, January 1st, 2025. The New Orleans attacker was working with at least three accomplices who the feds believe were trying to plant bombs and are now on the loose. We have from HalTurnerRadioShow.com, Empire State Building, U.S. Capitol, Washington Monument, all struck by lightning last night. So that would have been on New Year's Eve. Last night, as heavy rain and rare December thunderstorms rampaged through the eastern USA, three iconic structures were all struck by lightning. The Empire State Building in New York City, the U.S. Capitol, and the Washington Monument in Washington, D.C. The strikes all came before midnight on the East Coast. Speculation is running rampant that this was either the final FU of 2024 or a harbinger of bad things to come in the near future. Strangely, a terrorist attack, which took place early this morning in New Orleans, Louisiana, saw the driver of a pickup truck intentionally ran through crowds of people on historic Bourbon Street in the French Quarter of New Orleans. Former CIA officer warns 1,000 al-Qaeda fighters in the U.S. for next homeland attack. This was from Zero Hedge, January 2nd, 2025. In a recent discussion on the Sean Ryan Show, former CIA targeting officer Sarah Adams warned of a potentially devastating attack planned by al-Qaeda terrorists on American soil. The interview offers significant insights into what may be unfolding as al-Qaeda sleeper cells could be activating in the wake of the New Orleans terrorist attack. Then from the People's Voice, by Neam Harris, Biden invests $306 million to prepare for, quote, potential bird flu outbreak, unquote, in humans, January 4th, 2025. The outgoing Biden administration has just ramped up its bird flu spending. They have announced a $306 million investment to bolster bird flu monitoring and preparedness efforts across the U.S. to combat a so-called, quote, potential bird flu outbreak, unquote, among humans. The move comes right before handing over the reins to President-elect Donald Trump. Last week, the CDC confirmed what they described as the first severe human case of H5N1 bird flu in a 65-year-old Louisiana man. TGP reports, predictably, experts are now sounding the alarms about the virus's supposed mutations and potential for human transmission. A top cardiologist raises alarm. Current bird flu strain was man-made in U.S. biolab. This article was by Frank Bergman, December 31st, 2024, and appeared in SlayNews.com. A world-renowned cardiologist is raising the alarm after uncovering evidence that this current strain of bird flu is, quote, man-made, unquote, and was developed in an American biolab using dangerous gain-of-function research. The warning was issued by Dr. Peter McCullough, one of the world's leading medical experts. During an appearance on InfoWars, McCullough warned that the current strain of bird flu, H5N1, is a man-made problem that was developed in Georgia. McCullough explains that a peer-reviewed study traced the origins of the strain to the United States Department of Agriculture's Southeast Poultry Research Laboratory, SEPRL for short, in Athens, Georgia. Researchers believe the gain-of-function research is also tied to the Erasmus Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. Lindsey Graham says New Orleans terror attack means U.S. must start new wars in the Middle East. This was also by Baxter Dimitri, The People's Voice, January 2nd. The United States must start new wars in the Middle East, redeploy tens of thousands of troops, and spend hundreds of billions of dollars on regime change wars because of the terror attack in New Orleans, according to Senator Lindsey Graham. Writing on X in the immediate aftermath of the bloody terror attack, America's premier warmonger started by sharing condolences with the victims' families and those injured in the attack. And he wrote, quote, all Americans are heartbroken this New Year's Day because innocent people enjoying their lives were killed or injured in a senseless, cowardly act of terrorism. May God grant healing to the wounded and comfort to the families of the fallen, wrote Graham before warming up to his main theme. Then we have in foreign affairs, this is from HalTurnerRadioShow.com, January 1st, 2025. Ukraine shuts off natural gas supplies to Europe. Russian gas no longer piped through. As the new year arrived, the country of Ukraine shut off Russian natural gas supplies into Europe. Gas flow to Europe has halted. A contract between Ukraine and Russia to allow natural gas to transit through Ukrainian territory into Europe expired at midnight, and Ukraine decided to not renew it. Natural gas flows from Russia into Europe have halted, just as the northern hemisphere begins entering the coldest months of winter. European countries were made aware of Ukraine's decision, and they took whatever steps they could to store up natural gas, mostly in liquefied form in high-pressure tanks, in advance to get through the winter. Pope secretly working with WEF to destroy Christianity, usher in one world religion, according to Archbishop, by Bradley Greer. This was from Diswire.com on January 2nd, 2025. Archbishop Carlo Maria Vigano, recently excommunicated by the Vatican, has issued a strong warning about Pope Francis's collaboration with the World Economic Forum, the WEF, which he claims are working to dismantle Christianity. Quote, Klaus Schwab's fourth industrial revolution and the agenda of global finance have found an active ally in Pope Francis, Vergano asserted in a recent video message. He went on, far from remaining a neutral observer, which would already be unprecedented, Francis has become an enthusiastic collaborator, using his position of moral authority to endorse initiatives that seek to dismantle traditional society, unquote. According to Vergano, this effort isn't confined to secular institutions. And now we have some more information on the Pope. Pope Francis urges formation of global government to save humanity from, quote, existential threats. December 26, 2024, from the People's Voice, back to Dimitri, Pope Francis has called on humanity to form a global government to deal with existential threats facing humanity, including, quote, climate change, unquote, and economic disparity, during his annual message of peace for January 1, 2025. The existential threats facing the world cannot be dealt with by sovereign nations alone, because the problems are systemic and interconnected, the Pope claims, and thus they must be addressed by a global government. Quote, systemic challenges, distinct yet interconnected, are thus created and together cause havoc in our world, the Pontiff states in his message for the 58th World Day of Peace. And now, economic news. They can't hide it anymore. U.S. private sector employment is in a recession. This is also HalTurnerRadio.com. U.S. private sector full-time jobs have dropped by nearly 2 million over the past year. Such a drop has never happened outside of recessions. The only gain in full-time jobs has been in the government sector. The job market is not only weak, it's collapsing. And more financial news. Treasury Secretary, quote, will need extraordinary measures in January to avoid U.S. debt default, unquote. Now, I believe the Congress has extended the debt. What's the proper word? Increase the debt, I guess is the word. However, this is just kicking the can down the hall. So I'm going to read this anyway because we're probably going to be faced with the same thing in a few more months. This is by Hal Turner News, HalTurnerRadioNews.com. U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, has said the United States will reach its debt limit between January 14th and 23rd unless Congress takes action. When that takes place, the U.S. Treasury will have to commence, quote, extraordinary measures, unquote, to continue paying its bills and not default on the U.S. debt. Stock markets gave a noticeable and grim signal on Friday, with the S&P 500 not recovering a prior loss, as shown in the chart above. The signal could mean the markets know trouble is coming. Well, this is Lou again. The trouble didn't come this month, but it might very well. The debt keeps going up and up and up and up and up. One of these days, I will read to you what your share of that national debt is, and my share, and everybody's share. And I think your eyes will pop out, or ears, as the case may be. Now, back to some other facts. U.S. may face bankruptcy if situation with national debt does not change. This is from Elon Musk. And it appeared on en.apa.az. The United States may actually go bankrupt if it does not change the situation with the increase of the national debt. Businessman Elon Musk said on the X social network, APA reports. He said, we either fix this or go de facto bankrupt, the businessman said in a comment on the regulated exchange and predict And I should say, on the registered, make that regulated exchange and prediction market, Kelce's publication on the state debt level. Then more financial bad news. A terrifying financial crisis is set to erupt in 2025. This from KingWorldNews.com. Today, one of the greats in the business world warned a terrifying financial crisis is set to erupt in 2025. This is the form of, in the form of a couple of questions and answers. First, the question Eric King asked James, for people listening around the world, what is in front of us in 2025? And the responder is James Turk. Volatility. I think that's what everybody has to be prepared for. There is going to be a lot of volatility in all of the markets. There's going to be a search for safety, and I do think that a financial crisis of one sort or another is going to hit in 2025. Everything is coming to a head in 2025, and the financial crisis could be unleashed in early 2025, especially if, to listen to what this financial crisis that is set to erupt in 2025 will look like, and how you can safely navigate your way through the coming global shockwaves. And I think that sentence got interrupted there. I believe there is a video you can listen to. Then we have government seizes millions of pounds of food amid global crisis. This is by NOAA, and the website is 100%fedup.com and appeared December 29th, 2024. In an alarming turn of events, the U.S. government and major food corporations are reportedly recalling and confiscating vast quantities of food, allegedly storing them away in underground facilities. This secretive movement of food supplies has sparked widespread panic and concern, especially as the scarcity of essential items becomes increasingly apparent on store shelves. The actions taken by the authorities have sent shockwaves through the population, with experts issuing urgent warnings about impending shortages and potential social unrest. This is an article by Finn Hartley, republished with permission from naturalnews.com. Mike Adams and Steve Quayle joined forces to discuss these shocking developments. Quote, the U.S. government, under the National Defense Authorization Act, has gone to food companies and taken control of their supplies, Steve Quayle revealed. They're literally moving all the food to secret underground facilities, often through a covert logistics network known as the Secret Highway. Over 100 over 100 million pounds of food has already been transferred, with more expected to follow. Quayle emphasized the significance of these actions, stating that this is not merely a case of food recalls gone wrong, but a systematic effort by the government to remove essential resources from public access. The reasons for such action are varied but alarming. Quote, the government's motives are unclear, Adams noted, but the intentions seem dire. It's clear they are preparing for a crisis that could be global in scale. The gravity of the situation is underscored by the implications for food security. Quote, food is the ultimate weapon, Quayle declared, whether it's controlling a nation or securing the obedience of its people. We are witnessing a critical moment in history where basic necessities are being deliberately withheld from the masses. Adams agreed, adding, quote, we've seen this playbook before with COVID-19. The use of recalls is a covert, or rather a cover, to shut down supply chains. That's a tactic designed to create panic and uncertainty among the population. And now we'll go across the ocean to Great Britain. King Charles signs WEF treaty authorizing one world government with a media blackout. December 28, 2024, by Baxter Dimitri, The People's Voice. King Charles has openly declared that the elite must launch a vast military-style campaign to combat climate change, while calling for nothing less than a complete rewiring of the global economy. He has even suggested that traditional farming practices and the livelihoods of countless farmers should be sacrificed in the name of sustainability. And now, scientists are still assessing the roles, this is Lou speaking, the roles in Earth's ice ages of magnetic factors and the 11-year cycles of sunspots and their minimums, such as occurred during the Maunder and Dalton minimums and the associated Little Ice Ages. We'll tell you more about those in just a few minutes. Books we found informative and fascinating on this topic include Cold Sun, Dark Winter, and Upheaval, all by Dr. John L. Casey. In December 2019, climate scientists registered the fact that the sun had just entered an 11-year cycle of minimum sunspots. And I might add that we are just about in the middle of that cycle right now, as we are expecting another polar vortex, even as I speak. Now we bring you important information on the Little Ice Age and the year without a summer, 1816. And as a new polar vortex is approaching us, right here in January 2025, stories of courage and heroism will no doubt be common. We're also going to tell you about one such story of a daring rescue that took place in our area in 2015.
And now, when we're talking about this world in which we may have to have more brotherhood, really, and I mean that in a good sense, the type of community where I grew up, and it didn't start with Hillary Clinton's pronouncement that it takes a village to raise a child. I lived that. I experienced that in a little town in Pennsylvania that had its centennial in 1948. And I was a small child at that time, and I rode on a float, and I did something with a spinning wheel. I have a vague memory of this. And my father, who really was always a civic leader, and he was a promoter of things, he got in touch with KDKA in Pittsburgh, and an MC came, and there were beauty queens, there were floats, all kinds of things in this little town. My father also was very, very active in the local church, and he would pick up people in his mail route and bring them to church. If there were children who didn't have a way to come to Sunday school, he brought them. And today, I can't think of the man's name, but he's become sort of a music star. It may be religious music, I'm not certain, but anyway, I was told that he was one of those little children my father picked up and brought to Sunday school. He was a lay leader, he was a song leader, he had a wonderful baritone voice. And I can look back and I can see the stability of our lives, largely because of his Christian faith. Of course, he was human. He made some errors. He did some stupid things. But he was the closest to anyone I've ever met who consistently embodied Jesus Christ's love and help to others. You know, we all missed him when he died because he was sort of a rock, a quiet rock, but he was jovial and humorous. We liked to be around him, and I think that's very important in the days to come. And the many neighbors were like this, too, in that little area. And I think that we need to get back to that. We need to get our kids and our grandkids off some of those smartphones. We need to take them out in nature. We need to have some neighborliness. It's very important, and you can cultivate this. Well, we were starting to talk about this period that was the Little Ice Age, 1300 to 1870. And when we gave you some of this information on our previous program, we were a little bit puzzled because the writer of this, and we were looking at environmental history resources, and it was a little ice age from 1300 to 1870, and when they talked about how cold this was, they said that there was widespread crop failure, famine in some regions, population decline, and yet they talked about this was a time that things began to flourish in the 17th and 18th centuries with expanding agriculture and large-scale land reclamation in the Netherlands and England. And we were kind of puzzled by this. We thought that that was like a little bit of a contradiction. And right after that, Lou, we looked at our local weather and we found something happening at the Great Lakes. Would you tell us all about that?
Yes, Great Lakes are pretty well frozen, and commerce has come to a halt in many of them, same with Chesapeake Bay, same with a great many places, so that you just can't, you can't carry on the usual commerce.
And you remember what they were doing, the Coast Guard, describe that, the 8 feet ice?
They had a Coast Guard cutter, an icebreaker, and they were slowly but surely breaking up the ice to try to make a channel ships to carry vital supplies, fuel, other supplies, food in some cases. Many of those small towns and cities along the way depended upon transportation by ship to get supplies in. So with the ice blocking those travel lanes for the boats, it was a situation where a lot of the things just wouldn't get through, a lot of needed supplies.
And in this little article here on the little ice age, we're just going to review a little bit here what it was like. Then we're going to get into what was it really like the year without a summer in 1816. I think you're going to find that very interesting. During the height of the little ice age, it was in general about 1 degree Celsius colder than at present. The Baltic Sea froze over, as did most of the rivers in Europe. Winters were bitterly cold and prolonged, reducing the growing season by several weeks. These conditions led to widespread crop failure, famine, and in some regions, population decline. The prices of grain increased, and wine became difficult to produce in many areas, and commercial vineyards vanished in England. Fishing in northern Europe was also badly affected as cod migrated south to find warmer water. Storminess and flooding increased, and in mountainous regions, the tree line and snow line dropped. In addition, glaciers advanced in the Alps and northern Europe, overrunning towns and farms in the process. Now, we're reviewing some of what we presented the last time. Iceland was one of the hardest hit areas. Sea ice, which today is far to the north, came down around Iceland. In some years, it was difficult to bring a ship ashore anywhere along the coast. Grain became impossible to grow, and even hay crops failed. Volcanic eruptions made life even harder. Iceland lost half of its population during the Little Ice Age. Tax records in Scandinavia show many farms were destroyed by advancing ice of glaciers and by meltwater streams. Travelers in Scotland reported permanent snow cover over the Cairngorm Mountains in Scotland at an altitude of about 1,200 meters. In the Alps, the glaciers advanced and bulldozed over towns. Ice-dammed lakes burst periodically, destroying hundreds of buildings and killing many people. As late as 1930, the French government commissioned a report to investigate the threat of the glaciers. They could not have foreseen, and now I won't read that last sentence again, about human-induced global warming. I just cannot bring myself to read that lie. No. Now let's move right on to year without a summer, according to Wikipedia.
The year 1816 is known as the year without a summer. Also, the poverty year, the summer that never was, the year there was no summer, and 1800 and froze to death because of severe climate abnormalities that caused average global temperatures to decrease by 0.4 to 0.7 degrees Celsius. or the equivalent 0.7 to 1.3 degrees Fahrenheit. This resulted in major food shortages across the northern hemisphere. Evidence suggests the anomaly was predominantly a volcanic winter event caused by the massive 1815 eruption of Mount Tambora in the Dutch East Indies, Indonesia, the largest eruption in at least 1,300 years. The year without a summer was an agricultural disaster. Historian John D. Post has called this, quote, "the last great subsistence crisis in the Western world," unquote. The unusual climatic aberrations of 1816 had the greatest effect on most of New England, Atlantic Canada, and parts of Western Europe. Typically, the late spring and summer of central and northern New England and southeastern Canada are relatively stable.
And, Lou, we interject from another source here, The Year Without Summer by Lee Foster, meteorologist. We interject the other cause besides that volcanic eruption. So what caused this unusual weather during the summer of 1816? Some believe it was caused by sinners, while others even blamed it on Benjamin Franklin's lightning rod experiments. However, climate data obtained from trees, ice cores, marine sediment, and historical documents indicate 1816 was part of a mini ice age that lasted from 1400 to around 1860. During this time, lower solar output produced harsh winters, shorter growing seasons, and drier climates, which were blamed for a host of human suffering and crop failures, such as the Irish potato famine. Now, I wouldn't be sitting here if that hadn't happened, because my ancestors, through my father's mother, where I was related to James Whitcomb Riley, the homespun poet, they came from Ireland because of that Irish potato famine. Another possible cause was the eruption of the Tambora volcano on the island of Sumbawa in Indonesia on April 15, 1815. The eruption lasted 1 week and rumbled for 3 months. The mountain elevation dropped from 14,000 feet to 9,000 feet, killed close to 10,000 people on the island, and another 80,000 people would eventually die from starvation and diseases related to the eruption. Tambora was one of the largest recorded eruptions, with estimates of 1.7 million tons of dust put into the air, equaling 6 million atomic bombs. The theory is that the dust reached the northern hemisphere during the 1816 reducing solar output. Now, I believe that there was something more about the effect of the sun when I first looked at this, and perhaps I'm not seeing it now about the solar minimum, but I believe we'll be getting into that more a little later. Go back to your descriptions there, Lou. Let's find out more about what it was like.
Typically, the late spring and summer of central and northern New England and southeastern Canada are relatively stable. Temperatures, average of both day and night, average between about 68 and 77 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 and 25 degrees Celsius, and rarely fall below 41 degrees Fahrenheit. Summer snow is an extreme rarity. In the spring and summer of 1816, a persistent, quote, dry fog, unquote, was observed in parts of the eastern U.S. The fog reddened and dimmed the sunlight, such that sunspots were visible to the naked eye. Neither wind nor rainfall dispersed this fog. It has been characterized as a stratospheric sulfate aerosol veil. At higher elevations, where farming was problematic in good years, the cooler climate did not quite support agriculture. In May 1816, frost killed off most crops in the higher elevations of New England and New York. On June 6, snow fell in Albany, New York, and Dennysville, Maine. Many commented on the phenomenon. Sarah Snell Bryan of Cummington, Massachusetts, wrote in her diary, "Weather backward." That's in quotes.
And here is still another very formidable article here on Year Without a Summer. I think this gives us a big overview, a worldwide view, and it does get into the weak solar maximum. Let's see, where does this come from? Year Without a Summer by Willie Soon, S-O-O-N, and Stephen H. Yaskell, Y-A-S-K-E-L-L. Is there a website there, Lou, for that?
No, I got it from the internet.
But it's, you can look it up, Year Without a Summer.
The year 1816 is still known to scientists and historians as 1800 and froze to death, or the Year Without a Summer. It was the locus of a period of natural ecological destruction not soon to be forgotten. During that year, the Northern Hemisphere was slammed with the effects of at least two abnormal but natural phenomena. These events were mysterious at the time, and even today, they are not well understood. First, 1816 marked the midpoint of one of the sun's extended periods of low magnetic activity called the Dalton Minimum. This particular minimum lasted from about 1795 to the 1820s. It resembled the earlier Maunder minimum, which was from about 1645 to 1715. That was responsible for at least 70 years of an abnormally cold weather in the Northern Hemisphere. The Maunder minimum interval is sandwiched within an even better known cool period known as the Little Ice Age, which lasted from about the 14th through the 19th centuries. But the event that most severely shaped 1816's cold phenomena was a catastrophic eruption the previous year of Tambora on the island of Sumbawa in modern-day Indonesia. The ash clouds and sulfur aerosols spewed by this volcano were widespread, chilling the climate of the Northern Hemisphere by blocking sunlight with gases and particles. A third factor could also have played a role. During both the Dalton and the Maunder minima, the sun shifted its place in the solar system, something it does every 178 to 180 years. During this cycle, the sun moves its position around the solar system's center of mass. This particular trick of gravity is known as inertial solar motion. Scientists have not yet confirmed whether or not inertial solar motion affects Earth's climate directly, but it remains a possibility. The combined influences of the sun's changes in magnetism, a major volcanic eruption, and possibly even the wobbling of the sun's position were responsible for famine, drought, and destructive snows and rains in the Northern Hemisphere in 1816. Diary entries and newspaper accounts abound of the unusual spring and summer cold. People even noted the sky's abnormal color, the large sizes of sunspots, and other curiosities. Because most people in the Northern Hemisphere were subsistence farmers, crop failure meant not only hardship but often death. Crop yields in parts of America and Europe sank dangerously low for a year, causing eyes to focus on a blotchy sun and an angry god, or both. A miserable summer. The people who survived the drought and cold would long after refer to 1816 as 1800 and froze to death. Sleet fell in the northeastern United States, and snowdrifts remained 2 feet deep in late spring. In Franconia, New Hampshire, 88-year-old physician Edward Holyoake, an amateur astronomer and meteorologist who kept detailed weather records for 80 years, wrote on June 7th, "Exceedingly cold, this is a quote, exceedingly cold, ground frozen hard, and squalls of snow through the day. Icicles 12 inches long in the shade at noonday," unquote. Nobody could recall such a cold spring. Sheep froze in meadows, and small birds were easily caught by reason of the cold, or were found dead in fields.
Massachusetts physician William Bentley wrote on June 12th, "In few seasons have we heard more bitter complaints against cold weather than since June has come in. Others recorded killer droughts and a strange tepid dryness wafting on northwest winds. A vivid impression of the summer, that summer in the northeast U.S. appeared in verse. The trees were all leafless, the mountains were brown, the face of the country was scathed with a frown, and bleak were the hills, and the foliage sere, as had never been seen that time of the year. A certain degree of normalcy returned for part of the summer. In some coastal areas, the weather was, quote, bland and agreeable if humid, unquote. Spreading vegetable growth could fool anyone, even astute long-time weather observers like Holyoake described June 7th to August 17th as, quote, uniformly fine, unquote. He wrote in a confident hand that the crop outlook was better than could have been anticipated. But then the cold struck again. On August 21st, Holyoake wrote in a tenser hand, recording the frosts and snows that killed off the meager bean and corn crop. The difference between August 17th and 21st was like summer compared with winter. The fields were, quote, as empty and white as October, unquote. This particular damaging frost affected areas from southern Canada to North Carolina. Cold struck again on September 11th, and people tended fields as if dressed for December. In an age characterized by back-breaking labor, the, quote-unquote, poverty year, as 1816 was called by some, was a harrowing ordeal. The bad weather wasn't confined to North America. The summer weather in parts of Europe was so bad that it reminded people of November. On June 16th, Mary Wollstonecraft Shelley noted that the weather at Lake Geneva turned abruptly from dry and beautiful to lashing rain with howling winds and vicious lightning storms. Shelley was spending the cold and rainy summer in Switzerland with various literati.
Yes, and we might think about these parallels to our time. If this gets a lot worse, what are going to be some of the repercussions? We've already seen things happen at our grocery stores when people think the shelves are going to be empty, and we've seen people actually killed in Walmart trying to get over each other on Black Friday. So one of these things that happened here, these cool temperatures and heavy rains got the failed harvests coming in there in Britain and Ireland, and families in Wales traveled long distances as refugees begging for food. And this famine in northern and southwest Ireland after the wheat, oats, and potato harvests failed. And in Germany, the crisis was very severe. Food prices rose sharply, and people demonstrated in front of grain markets and bakeries, and later riots. Arson and looting took place in many European cities, and it was the worst famine of 19th century Europe, according to the Wikipedia article. Lou, continue what you have.
And speaking of Mary Shelley, it says most, this is in Switzerland, were confined indoors on the stormy June 27th.
And some people listening may not know who Mary Shelley was. Why don't you tell what her claim to fame is?
Yes, it's going to say that in just a second here. And it says they were telling rounds of ghost stories. One of them, by the way, was Lord Byron as well. They were companions there with a couple of other literary personalities. And they pledged to record these fables on paper. And Mary Shelley was the first to prevail by 1818. As a fruit of her labors, we have the Gothic chiller Frankenstein, or the modern Prometheus.
And if you recall, one of these articles said that some people thought this was due to sinners. If you really look into the lives of Shelley, Byron, you'll be very, very shocked. all the horrible decadence and immorality is not just in our times. And we can see now, as Lou and I get a little older, we can see a lot of people who looked initially on the top and are beginning to fall. Some of them are getting very sick. Some of them are just not doing well. Their families have abandoned them because they didn't care and because they weren't under Jesus Christ. It is a very special legacy that you can give your family. What is the verse, Lou? As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. I might have it a little bit out of sync, but that's the idea. You have to make this choice. And whatever times we live in, God will protect his own. It's very clear. Well, what about the solar maximum? It was pretty strange then, wasn't it? Just like we've had this strange minimum here.
That's right. First, let's focus on how the sun made 1816 a bad year. The Dalton and Maunder minima were extended periods of very weak solar activity, spanning about 25 years and 70 years, respectively. Records from these periods show far fewer sunspots than normal, meaning the sun's magnetic activity was very weak during those years. Even though the sun is covered by relatively few dark sunspots when it is not magnetically active, it also has fewer bright regions known as plages and faculae. Sustained periods of weak magnetic activity make the sun slightly dimmer, so Earth receives less solar light energy. Scientists have recently reconstructed this weak magnetic activity by measuring various chemical isotopes in tree rings, for example, and matching them to weather and temperature oddities. Cosmic rays transmute nitrogen-14 in Earth's upper atmosphere, creating the radioactive isotope carbon-14. In the 1970s, solar astronomer John Eddy of the High Altitude Observatory in Boulder, Colorado, showed that carbon-14 concentration in annual tree growth rings is higher when fewer sunspots blemish the sun's surface. There's an astronomical explanation for this linkage. Strong magnetic activity in the sun is passed on to the solar wind, a stream of protons and helium nuclei flowing outward from the sun at high speed. A strong magnetic field in the solar wind shields Earth from cosmic rays. Because fewer cosmic rays collide with Earth, less carbon-14 forms in the atmosphere. But when solar magnetism is weak, more galactic cosmic rays can reach Earth and make more carbon-14. The carbon-14, in turn, combines with oxygen molecules in the atmosphere to make the heavy version of carbon dioxide that will ultimately be incorporated into the cellulose of growth rings of living trees. Labrador retrieved. Firefighters save dog trapped in ice by Chris Polk. It could have been a sad story for a yellow Labrador retriever who had wandered onto the ice and fallen in Dixon Creek on Thursday, February 19th. But a plumber who was working on a house off Ratcliffe Manor Road spotted a little head moving way out on the creek, surrounded by ice at about 2 p.m. "All I could see was the head," said Phil Jones, chief of the fire department. "I was actually surprised he saw the dog." When they got the call, the volunteer fire department was dispatched first for an animal rescue. They determined a better angle to try to rescue the dog would be from property along Lee Haven Road. While en route, firefighter Jason Spies called the fire department because he knew it had special ice and cold water diving gear. Jones said, quote, "We also have other handy stuff to help us get across ice." The dog was in the middle of the ice about 275 feet out, Spies said. Quote, "There was an open spot in the middle of the creek, and that's where the dog went in," Jones said. Jones and firefighter Brian Sadler were the ones who donned special ice and cold water suits and got in the water. Jones went on to say, "Once we get in, We had to break the ice literally to get out to the dog. He said he and Saddle used their hands, poles, and body weight to break the ice while towing a canoe. Jones said they could no longer touch bottom at about 120 feet out, and the two began swimming and breaking the ice. They dragged the canoe alongside them, carrying some equipment, and were tethered by a line to a point on shore. They estimated the dog was in the water for about 45 minutes. While the firefighters said they did not know what the water temperature was, the air temperature did not get above 20 degrees Thursday on the midshore. Jones also said, quote, the dog was below the water, all except for his head. He said the dog was caught up in the ice and could not move. He was whining a lot, Jones said. The closer we got, you could hear it crying. When they reached the dog, they were able to ease it out, collar first. The dog started swimming once freed and started paddling as the two firefighters made their way with her to shore. Spies said the rescue, from the time they left shore until the time they got back, only took about 7 minutes. Spies says he's sort of the unofficial timekeeper for Easton. Jones said Talbot County Animal Control was ready and waiting when they got to shore. The paramedics wrapped the dog up and put it in the back of the animal control van, Jones said. He said the dog was taken to the Veterinary Medical Center, where Dr. Dean Tyson reported the dog had been checked out and was hungrily eating a large meal at about 6 p.m. Tyson reported it on the Talbot County Department of Emergency Medical Services Facebook page. Spies said they understood the dog's owners were away at the time. By later that evening, he said the dog had gone home. And spies went on to say, with no difficulties or anything, they gave him some warm fluids, warm food to eat, and everything was good. Spies said the firefighters handled the rescue in record time. From the time we were alerted for the call to the time we were back at our firehouse, it was like an hour and 11 minutes.